Okay, let's play Name That Tune. I bet you can name this tune in four notes. The correct answer is the Pink Panther, and it's one of the many themes my guest Henry Mancini is famous for. From TV, there's his themes for Peter Gunn and Mr. Lucky, which introduced a lot of baby boomers to jazz. More recently, he wrote TV themes for Newhart Hotel and Remington Steele. Then there are his movie themes, The Days of Wine and Roses and Breakfast at Tiffany's, whose title song was Moon River. Mancini also wrote the scores for the films A Touch of Evil, A Shot in the Dark, Victor Victoria, Ten, and Blind Date, along with hundreds of others. He's won 4 Oscars and 20 Grammys. His latest credit is the score for the new film The Glass Menagerie, Paul Newman's adaptation of the Tennessee Williams drama. Henry Mancini is joining us from the NPR Bureau in Los Angeles. Before we meet him, let's listen to an excerpt of his score for The Glass Menagerie. How did you get to score the Paul Newman remake of Glass Menagerie?
Well, I had done this is my 5th project with Paul. I had started with Sometimes a Great Notion, and we'd done Shadowbox, A Harry and Son, and another thing. And so it was a matter of having worked with him a good bit, and Paul called me and asked me to do it.
Did he give you any idea of what he was looking for musically?
Yeah. One thing he said, I don't want any violins. So right away, I saw where he was headed. You know.
What did that say to you?
Well, it said to me that he didn't want. I think he was aiming at more of a chamber kind of a score. We did use we used a double string quartet, but you could never really tell that by it never gave the impression of a big so-called. What would you say? Hollywood score. No, it was a double quartet, woodwinds and woodwinds and a couple of keyboards. So it was kind of small scale. That's what he was saying, and I think his instinct was exactly right.
Did you want to go back to the 1950 film with Jane Wyman and look at the score that they used?
No, no.
Intentionally avoid it?
I had no desire to. I don't even know who did that score. One thing I did listen to, well, it came with the script, was the, you see, there was a stage score that wasn't very much. It was just a few. I used one theme out of that score by Paul Bowles. It's on the album, too. It's Jonquils or something like that. You know, it's actually Joanne Woodward's theme, the mother theme in the picture. So I'd heard that, and I picked that one out to use because Joanne liked it very much, and she had done the show on the stage so often that she kind of felt comforted, you know, in hearing something that she remembered.
I'd like to go back to the beginning of your career in Hollywood. You started off in the early 1950s at Universal, and I guess you were on contract there, and from the way I understand it, you did about 100 films. One of those films was Touch of Evil, which is directed by Orson Welles, one of the real great films. Did you do a lot of schlock also?
Well, it was mostly schlock.
Was it?
It was mostly, we had everything there. I did, well, let me put it this way. I was there 6 years, and Universal, during that time, made around 50 pictures a year. So that number of 100 is quite under what the real figure would be. But we had all kinds of stuff. Westerns, these old Rory Calhoun Westerns. Ma and Pa Kettle, Francis the Mule, Bonzo the Ape, stuff like that. In addition, well, I got about two or three good pictures while I was there. The Glenn Miller story was another one.
Did you have to learn all the Hollywood cliches of the period?
Yeah, that was the best part. What do you mean of the period? They're still around. there's no period. I did. I've said that in the past. Learning the cliches was most fun of all, just to know that you could do what the big boys were doing at the time. But that's true. And in doing that, you get that all out of your system. You have attacks of it once in a while sometimes.
Can you describe some of the cliches that you had to learn? Like, was there a certain kind of sound to go for to bring tears to people's eyes, and something else that you'd have to use for a Rory Calhoun Western?
Yeah, well, it was the day of the overstated villain and overstated, I would say, you know, because every time my boss during those years was Joe Gershenson, who was a marvelous man and very astute dramatically, he was a street guy from New York, and he had a very succinct way. He called it, you know, when you have like the villain appears, he'd say, "I want a jig-a-jig there," and a jig-a-jig was something like that, you know. And then, of course, the outdoor themes, and it was fun. I really got a kick out of it.
Can you use those cliches now?
If called for, yeah, it depends. You have to be very careful, though. You know, people have to know you have your tongue in your cheek, or else they say, "What's that old fogey doing up there?" You know.
My guest is composer Henry Mancini. Now, the theme that you wrote that really made you famous to everybody in America was the theme from Peter Gunn, which was the TV detective show that started in, I think it was 1958. And
right.
he was, I guess, one of the first really cool private eyes on television. It was a jazz theme. Why did you decide to go with a jazz theme for the show?
Well, Blake Edwards, you know, was the writer, producer, director of that series. And he set up a club. I don't know whether some of the younger people in the audience have seen the show recently. It's still on. It's still going all
over
the place.
Yeah, in reruns, yeah, yeah. You're talking about the club Mothers, the nightclub.
Mothers, yes. Mothers, which was very risque at the time to call the place Mothers, you know. And it was a jazz club. And so I took the cue from that. And it just seemed a very natural thing to do. And Blake didn't really point me in any direction. He just said, "Here, do it." And that's what came out. And at the time, you remember, that was a period of the West Coast cool jazz. And we had all the great guys out here of that school who were playing, you know, among them Larry Bunker, Shelly Mann. We had a marvelous band on that show. So the jazz spilled over into the scoring. And I think it worked pretty well.
Could I ask you to describe what was in your mind when you wrote the score, the sound that you were going for?
Well, first of all, you have to separate the theme from the score. If you notice, the theme has really nothing to do with jazz. The theme I wrote because I said, "Now, Peter Gunn, what am I going to do here? I have to have something that's going to get their attention right away." And this ostinato bass came in, you know, and it sounded very powerful in the low, with the guitar and the bass and the piano playing, boom, 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 boom. And that was another thing. That was, I think, the secret of the success of that piece was the fact that it was 8 to the bar, which indicated rock and roll. And as you know, there have been many records. Jimi Hendrix recorded it. The Art of Noise did it last year. And all along the way, there have been many recordings by the rock people It's a punk favorite, too.
I know. Well, yeah. I'm going to play your recording of it from one album that you made of the theme. And this is Henry Mancini's theme from Peter Gunn. Yeah, that really does still sound great.
thank you.
Do you ever
thank
still
you.
Listen to it?
No, not much. I don't. I listen to my things right after I make them. Albums, or if it's a movie, I'll look at it, and whatever I do, I just do them, and then I file them away, and I rarely, unless I come across it, of course, in. On the radio, or I'm looking at TV, and I happen to pass a station, pass a channel that is playing a picture.
You know, a friend of mine who used to watch Peter Gunn all the time, still does on reruns, says that he grew up always wanting to be followed around by a walking bass line like Peter Gunn was.
Yeah, well, you know something that walking bass in television, anyhow, or in scoring, has become. Is a cliche of that period, you know. But at that time, it hadn't been used that much, and it's the greatest thing for sustaining any kind of a line or an emotion. You do it slow, it has another effect. You do it fast, and you get very exciting music from it. I think that was the key, that opening bass line, yeah, now that I think about it.
You know, TV themes were almost like... folk music for people who grew up in the 1950s. It was the soundtrack for your life in a way, and you heard the same song over week after week at the same time. So I think you really profoundly influenced a lot of people who grew up in the 1950s.
Yes, thank you.
When you wrote the Pink Panther theme, did you intend that as almost a parody of the Peter Gunn theme?
No. It had nothing to do. It was a different kind of... in fact, the Pink Panther was much more jazz than Peter Gunn. It had a different feeling to it, of course, but it was just a theme that I had written for the David Niven character, the Phantom, you know, in the play, in the movie, and it just happened. I had no idea when I wrote that theme, which I wrote very quickly, by the way. It just came out. It was like a rush. But I had. Written that for David Niven, who played the Phantom, and when Blake told me he was going to have a cartoon, animated feature, not feature, animated cartoon at the beginning, I said, well, gee, I said to myself, well, I've already written that. So I just adapted it and made it fit in with all of the things that they did on the screen.
I just want to play a little taste of the theme that you wrote for the Pink Panther. I think that you're one of the composers who really helped forge that link between crime stories and jazz themes. And then there was a period, I think, where jazz was used much less, on television especially, for crime themes and for detective themes.
Yeah. Well, in movies, you know, jazz had been used mostly, sadly enough, For pictures that had sleazy backgrounds or had dope or, you know, had drinking or something of that sort. It was always attached to that. It had that stigma to it. And I was happy at Peter Gunn that I was able to inject some humor, which, of course, you know, jazz can be very humorous if used in the right way.
Well, I want to talk with you more about your composing and about how you compose for movies. But first, we're going to take a short break. My guest is composer Henry Mancini. His latest project is the score for the new film, The Glass Menagerie, directed by Paul Newman. We'll talk more about Henry Mancini's work after this break. This is Fresh Air. Composer Henry Mancini is my guest. You were telling us earlier that in the early 50s, you were really called on to use a lot of the clichés for the movies that you did. Now, you're still doing a lot of movies, and I think that perhaps the way movie music is used has changed. Do you find that there is less underscoring required now in movies, that there's more periods where there's no music in the background?
I don't know that that's true. When you get to the big pictures, you know, that started with the Star Wars kind of score that Johnny Williams did, then you've got wall-to-wall music. So in that instance, and all of those pictures that followed, all of the Star Treks, all of the space pictures, they were kind of loaded. But I think it's more selective now. I remember, if you've ever seen some of those early black and white comedies, there's always something going on in the background. In fact, in the Laurel and Hardy comedies, there's always something just beyond your ear that's going on, and I don't know whether they felt that the comedians couldn't sustain it without it, but it was just a way of working. But now, it's people are listening too. You have to be careful that you don't get in the way of the picture, because there are a lot more people that are fans of movie music, and not only the rock music that we have in our pictures, but for dramatic underscore.
What do you do when you're scoring? Do you watch the sequence over and over again until you really get a sense of its rhythm?
Well, the first thing I do, I love to see, I think it's very necessary to see the picture in a big room, in a big theater, not necessarily with a lot of people, but a big screen in a big in a screening room. Then after I've got that out of the way, they let me have a video cassette, VHS. And that's only recent. I've only been doing that for about the last 5, 6, 7 years. But that's a big help, because I can sit there with the remote and go back and forth and really get involved in the screen.
Do you like to read the script beforehand? Or do you just wait till
sometimes
you get
I get sometimes I get in where long after the script is gone. Many pictures I've done where I have not read the script because I wasn't called in until the picture was finished, and then the script is useless.
You know, since American Graffiti, a lot of movies have had records as the soundtrack, and then there's a soundtrack album that's basically a collection of already produced records. Is that kind of soundtrack helping to put composers out of business in Hollywood?
Well, someone has to do it, and I guess the songwriters would be considered composers too. That's not a problem with me. It's just the natural curve of the business, the way the film industry is going. You know, something about, I was just thinking, in The Glass Menagerie, it was about 1940, you know, the period.
Mm-hmm.
And we could have gone the route of using songs of the period. You know what I mean? Things that other pictures have done that before. Many pictures have done that for the nostalgia, you know. But in thinking it through, I said, now, this is a very sensitive project here, this Tennessee Williams play. And I think that in order to capture the period, we must do it by music that sounds like the period rather than something that's going to take the viewer away from their thoughts about the movie. You see, when they're playing an old tune, automatically your mind is a very wondrous thing.
You mean like, what was I doing back in 1940?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. And I didn't want that to happen, and I knew it would, because it does. You know, no matter, if you're looking at a picture and you, it's like hearing an old friend, and it kind of takes you away from the business of hand, which is trying to understand and appreciate what's going up on the screen.
You're still working for television also. Recent themes include the Newhart theme, Remington Steele, mm-hmm. NBC News election coverage. Is television more demographic-oriented than it used to be? Do they tell you the market that they want, the age group they want to reach when they tell you to write a theme and they ask you to write a theme?
No, that hasn't come up, but I think that's something that, you know, all the things that you just mentioned now, the Remington Steele, Newhart, and Hotel, you have to go for what those pictures are about. And then, you know, none of them are the closest one that comes to any kind of a rock feeling is Remington Steele. And that the rhythm in that kind of harks to that kind of music. But I listen to the title gives me the clue there, and the way it goes. I feel if it hits the right mood, like Hotel is certainly not a demographic theme, I don't think. Its harmonies are involved, and its melody spins off in this way and that way, which is the exact opposite of Top 40 radio. So I think you have to go for saying what you're going to see after the theme is over.
I want to ask you about another song that you wrote that's become a standard. And I'm thinking of Moon River, which was mm-hmm. the theme from Breakfast at Tiffany's. You've written more scores than you have songs, I think. That's fair to say. You're going to correct
yes.
that?
No, no.
Oh, okay.
No.
tell me what you were thinking about when you wrote that song.
Well, you hit a good point there. All of the songs, just practically all of the songs that I have had written or were popular and are popular now, came out of dramatic situations from the movie. In other words, I didn't sit down to write Moon River as a popular song. In fact, I don't think I could do that. I wouldn't know where to start. I have to have something to react to, and therefore all of the songs are actually themes that came out of the various films.
What are some of the strangest places you've heard your songs or themes played?
Oh, goodness. I was in Osaka once, and we were doing concerts. And we went to have something to eat after the concert, and we went up to this place. It was like a Top of the Mark or something like that. And they had a piano player came in, and he didn't know we were there at all. He didn't know I was there. And I could see him right now. He's a little, kind of little guy, had a pinstripe suit. He looked like a hitman for the mafia. And he came in, and he sat down, and the first thing he started playing was Moon River. And he had, it's a simple song, you know, you can play it all on the white keys, and you get off in great shape. But he proceeded to put some exotic harmonies in there. Well, no, exotic's not the right word. Wrong harmonies. And by the time he was finished, we we were literally couldn't contain ourselves. My bass player, Abe Laboriel, was over there, and he had slid off the chair under the table because these are musical jokes, you know. And to hear something that, like, we just finished playing with the orchestra on the stage, and then to hear this guy come and do a version that was really unorthodox. things like that. The funny things are great, you know.
Do you hear your music performed in restaurants and elevators and things like that?
Oh, I hope so. I think, you know, that's a good place to be. That shows that the songs are well known and that people will accept them.
Have you ever turned around to someone and said, "Hey, buddy, I wrote that song"?
No, not that I can remember. You know, no.
Oh, one last thing. Did you ever want to lead a jazz band or write for orchestras, you know, for the symphony hall, instead of writing film music?
Well, it's come around, I've done it all. I've done all of that you've mentioned. I've done pieces for concert halls, and I've done the jazz big band albums when I was recording for RCA. So I've managed to hit all the bases.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your work.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Have you been to see the Glass Menagerie yet?
Oh yeah, I'm going to London next week. I have a concert with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, and I'm going to see the picture over there again. They're having a premiere, so I'm looking forward to that.
So does it look really different with the music?
Oh yes. Yes. The music does help, you know.
Yes, I know. Thank you for speaking with us. My guest has been composer Henry Mancini, and his latest project is the score for the new film The Glass Menagerie, directed by Paul Newman. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.